We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the only hysterically funny gathering which doesn't convene at the seaside. For this week's opening speech, we ask Brian Perkins for a little clarification.
To avoid speculation, please note that during the winter we will open every day at 11:30 a.m, except Mondays and Tuesdays when we're closed. When we're open, we close at 2:30 p.m, reopening at 7 p.m. before deciding when to close. Except Sundays when, as we're obliged not to open until 30 minutes later, we don't close until 30 minutes later, but then we don't reopen. When weather deteriorates, we've often reopened for catering extremely early and not close until much later, except when there's no point opening. When we are open, food is available at normal meal times, so obviously there may be times when we are open but not serving food. However, we won't, of course, be serving food when we're not open. That would be silly.
Great thanks to Ian Haywood of Tower Hill for sending us that. Well, time to meet the panel now. On my right, representing Private Eye, we have Richard Ingrams and John Wells. And on my left, the world at one's Nick Clark, together with the famously tireless speaker, Alan Corran. We open round one with this from the Oxford Mail.
Foreign Secretary and Whitney MP Douglas Hurd visited a stud farm at Lee Field to see West Oxfordshire students at work. More than 100 students from all over the world are taking stud and stable husbandry courses at Whitney's West Oxfordshire College. They carry out their practical work with thoroughbreds at Fairspear Stud Farm.
Well, thanks to Mr. J.A. Dobson for that, but not a lot. Richard, your question. Who's got firm proposals for family business?
It's either Prince Charles or Esther Ranson.
I think the answer lies somewhere between the two.
Oh, jolly difficult to imagine that. Someone existing.
Cast your mind to a lady member of Parliament.
Thazza.
Gaza.
Is it Thazza?
No, it's not Thazza, usually a great puddin'. It's the other one.
Oh, Glenys.
No.
No, she's not.
Alan, bail us out.
I think you invented her. I think it's Rambling Angela Rumble, isn't it?
It is Rambling Angela Rumble.
Around the twist. She wants to pay women for going to work and staying at home.
That's right.
Because she thinks women should do everything in this world.
Quite right. The answer is Angela Rumbold, MP, who would like to see the family replaced by a parent company with 2.4 wholly owned subsidiaries and run like a public corporation. In other words, build it up with care and nourishment, cream off the profits and flog it back to a gullible public. It's believed that the Prime Minister would be happy to have her own family quoted on the stock exchange if only someone could decipher Dennis. Meanwhile, the prototype for a Rumboldian family was launched last week in Walthamstow.
The daughter of former Waltham Forest Mayor's chauffeur John Putland was married at St John's Church on Saturday. Karen Putland, 30, wore champagne ivory dress with lilac roses and lace sleeves when she married Douglas Brett, 24. The wedding ended a five-year romance.
John Wells, your question now. Who made his mark being frank with the pound? Another government question, of course.
This, obviously, Mark, is not the very wonderful young executive Mark Thatcher, is it?
No.
No, it's obviously something to do with the tiny Ronnie Corbett lookalike, John Major.
Quite right.
Was the thing. And little John Major trotted out with his message of love and benevolence, and we're now slotted into the Deutschmark and the Peseta, I was rather depressed to see.
On the sliding scale.
On a sliding snake. Yeah. And if the pound goes down, millions of pesetas are immediately thrown into the Bank of England to rebalance it. It's all very simple. And it eventually will lead to the creation of an European currency called écu.
Quite right. This refers to Her Majesty's... Whatever he said, I'm going to agree with him. You never know when you're safe with these people. This refers to Her Majesty's Keeper of the Cash Point card, John Major, and the strategically timed announcement that Britain is to join the ERM or the EMS or the IOU and become a fully fledged contributor to the EAM, the European Acronym Mountain. and we welcome Nick Clark to the programme with a transatlantic question. Nick, where was finance declared U.S.?
Mr. Bush Senior, Mr. Bush Junior, who this question is not about, had a bit of problems with the Silverado Building Society equivalent. However, Mr. Bush Senior was having an equivalent problem on a rather larger scale with the entire United States budget. And he lent on everyone, and everyone disagreed with him. And they've now come back, and he's agreed with them at the very last moment in order to get the... Well, I think the best quote from this entire operation was, "The only zoo open in Washington is Congress." They've managed to save the US budget, and they've managed to open the rest of the zoos around Washington.
Absolutely right, perfectly right. It's in Washington, where America was officially declared bankrupt due to insoluble disagreements between President Bush and reality. All of which meant that government-run concerns were closed down, well, all except Mr. Bush, causing particular annoyance on a public holiday to zoo visitors, and the thousands who turn up every afternoon for the almost human antics of the Vice President's tea party. Alan, guess what? A musical clue for you.
Please, Mr. Minister, a word with you. Only take a minute, sir, so don't you screw. You no fight against the rum, man. You no fight against the wine, man. You no fight against the cigarette smoking. Yet you know, these things give cancer.
Well, that was called The Healing of the Nation, and the question is, why might Mr. Cook think too many clerks spoil the broth?
It's not about clerks' leak.
Yes.
Do you mind?
Well, I thought about that. It's fraught with imponderability and pun, this stuff. I rather enjoy that stuff. it's all about clerks' injury. I mean, the Labour Party has got hold of clerks' plans. Clerk writes his stuff down and then... Someone hard up in this hard-pressed economy of ours flogs it from Tory central office to waiting shadow members who are standing in the street outside, and then they use this to embarrass the government. It's a shocking procedure, but it's going to cost Clark... Well, it's going to cost us! What a Clark! It was sod for Clark, but it's going to cost us £400 million, or several billion. And anyway, we're not going to get the teeth we want, or the wigs, or any of that.
Don't you think that the leak investigators ought to see whether Robin Cook is on the mailing list of the Department of Health? He gets so many leaked documents.
Clearly.
Clark's leak is probably a name for prostate operations that people have been waiting 10 years to have done.
Unfortunately...
Are you all right now? I've got Clark's leak on. Hang on a bit. They'll be back in 2007. You'll have it done then.
It's about the Labour Party, this time, namely Robin Cook, who published a leaked memo to Kenneth Clark, Secretary of State for Cuts, revealing the minister's negotiation techniques. Apparently, the opposition feared the same bartering system would eventually creep into the health service when you go to the doctor with a sore finger and he'd offer to cut your arm off. And I can leak the scores at the end of round one, which are Richard and John, 2, but Alan and Nick, 5. And now over to Brian for this essential information issued by the Devon and Cornwall Constabulary.
Fire alarms will be tested on Wednesday, the 3rd of October, between 1500 and 1700 hours. Staff are to carry on working and are not to carry out the evacuation procedure during this time. Staff should remain attentive to the fact that a real fire could break out, in which case testing would cease and the normal fire procedures would come into being.
Oh, thanks to Doug Flack of Exeter for sending us that. Richard, whose maths don't add up to much?
There's always a poll, isn't there? There's always some survey that's been done.
That's right.
And the survey this week showed that no one can add up.
Not even the simplest sums.
Yes. Well, they all have these little...
Yeah, they do.
What are they called?
I don't know, but they do have them, I know.
And they fiddle around with them, and up comes the answer.
Exactly,
you don't have to be able to do it anymore.
However, they can't do it anymore, as my friend was saying, so that's the answer.
I think that'll do.
Yeah.
I think that's enough, Ed. It refers to a survey commissioned by the Basic Skills Accreditation Initiative, which claims that millions of adults are hopeless at maths. Didn't stop John Major getting on, though. Anyway, 40%, that's 40%, of those polled couldn't divide a simple restaurant bill, while two-thirds were unable to work out the interest on £6,000 at 12%, claiming it would have been much easier trying to work out when you could get £6,000 at 12%. John, your question. Why are the days of 999 numbered?
British Telecom are now charging, I think, 42p to ask them whether that is British Telecom you're speaking to. And Mrs. Thatcher has plunged into it, putting in a lot of mercury and other substitutes to suggest competition so that it will pull our prices down overnight.
And now I'll ask the other side.
It was long but wrong, I think.
Yes, long and wrong, is it?
We want to be very European with our numbers, don't we? We want to go to 911, an equally and totally impressively unmemorable number, instead of 999, for no better reason than they do it like that over there.
Yes, that's right. You get your bonus point for that. This refers to British Telecom's threat to replace 999 with either 991 or 112. Presumably they'll tell us which. For a fee, and answer calls with which service do you require? Fire, police, or directory inquiries? They claim they want to change to 112 to make it easier for the French. As it's a lot quicker when your sheep are on fire. Hello. Talking of sheep, over to Brian.
The carré d'agneau, crisply sealed, blush pink inside, came with a tangled web of potatoes gratinade. The roast beef was served with sour sweet wedges of brown parsnips, Yorkshire pudding, carrots, runner beans, and an array of mustards. I cannot remember what the fish of the day was, but it was unforgettable.
Thank you, Brian. Nick, have a listen to this. It's just an admission, a nervous condition. It's more than a push, it's a barge. Oh, 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 oh. Everyone's judged by the names in their address books and how many blacklists they're pulling in return. After the show, when resistance is low, there's an act that you go through that wins you an Oscar. The boy's got abilities love. Group, presumably called the Dyslexics. Anyway, whoever it was, they were singing a number called Women in Charge. Nick, your question is, who wants Auntie to be more feminine?
The BBC would like a lot more women bosses.
That's right.
And since I have one, it's a jolly good thing too.
Excellent. Well, there's not an awful lot, really, about that. It's all about Michael Checkland, Director General of Blank Checkland, who has set the corporation a series of gender targets to ensure that 30% of its senior staff will be female. This, he hopes, would encourage more women in broadcasting to develop their full potential, i.e. get a job on independent television. And while we're on the subject, Alan, whose wardrobe is a catalogue of disaster?
I'm thrown. Wardrobe. Woman's wardrobe.
Woman's wardrobe.
Catalogue of disaster. Someone looks terrible in clothes. You're doing that. It's Tommy Cooper. He did that.
I'll go into this sort of voice, and he's on holiday, or he's gone to Hollywood
Bush,
or somewhere, and there's
Barbara
a replacement.
Bush, yes. is that an American accent?
No.
Oh,
Abyssinian.
It's his Irish accent. It's
not. Who replaces Terry Wogan when he's not on, Alan?
Oh, Ian Paisley.
Yes, quite right.
Ian Paisley's suspender belts have been brought up for auction. This is about Sue Lawley, is it? And she's been voted the worst-dressed Wogan or something. Some of the list of all the other people who aren't Terry Wogan. I don't know this, but I'll...
You don't get clues like that.
I defer to you. Does anybody else know it?
Favouritism.
Would you like to... Well, I mean, that's basically the answer. Would you like to take it on, folks?
No.
No. I was just thinking, I hope old Perkins isn't going to be replaced. Wouldn't be the same, would it? No.
A bearded lady announcer wouldn't do the trick at all. It's about Her Eminence Sue Lawley, the desert island diva, and Terry Wogan's stuntman, who's been accused by fashion designer Vivienne Westwood of looking like something from a dreadful mail order catalogue. Like what, Lulu? And now it's time to reveal the scores at the end of round two, which are Richard Ingrams and John Wells 4, Alan Corran and Nick Clark 9. Well played. And over to Brian for the start of round three.
A Stamford man has served 28 days in prison for disobeying a High Court order to stay away from his estranged wife. Brian Eason was said to have broken the injunction when he met his wife in the street and punched her after an argument. His solicitor told the court, to some extent there was provocation. He was kicked in the groin and his wife said, "Go on then, hit me."
We're going to have a lot more of them in the BBC as well. But meanwhile, Richard, let me hit you with this. Who thinks TV violence is on to a winner?
Is it that very nice person, Michael Winner, the film producer?
Yeah.
What a sweet kid.
He is, isn't he? He makes horrible... I mean, very nice films about massacres and chainsaws and things. What's he up to?
That is the question, if anybody can tell me.
Very good, yes, very good. Nobody knows, come on.
Nobody knows, I'll tell you. It refers to Michael Winner, as you so correctly deduced after I told you. Director of Death Wish 1, Death Wish 2, Death Wish 3, and ruddy nor, hasn't someone shot Charles Bronson yet? The point is that he is claiming that more television violence would actually reduce the number of soccer hooligans and street thugs. We can only assume he's got the TV rights for publicly hanging them. Actually, according to Ken Elkington, who spotted this in the Boston Citizen, Mr. Winner may have a point.
A policewoman was taken to Pilgrim Hospital with minor concussion and a grazed right knee after she was attacked on Saturday night by a litter bin.
John, suddenly get your feet tapping now.
When I was young, my father said, son, I have something to say. And what he told me I'll never forget until my dying day. He said, son, you are a bachelor boy, and that's the way to stay. Son, you be your bachelor boy until your dying day.
The question is, who's notched up his 50 with barely a single score?
I suppose it was the indestructible Cliff Richard, reaching his 70th birthday at a time we're all very excited by him being 70 and looking so youthful. Or perhaps it's his 90th birthday. Is it? Well, the Queen Mother?
It's all about Cliff, a former 16-year-old bachelor boy and young one, has finally become a 50-year-old, John. You'd be delighted to know. Bachelor boy and young one, a man who's enjoyed more publicity for not doing it as Anthony Mayer and Cecil Parkinson have for... being themselves. But Cliff needn't worry too much, as this notice shows.
21st of March at 8 p.m, Tom Jones in concert, plus support.
Well read. Terrible.
Nick, who'd be forgiven for thinking the commandment was honour thy Batman and Robin?
I've heard about these messages in the ether, and now I'm to see one with my very own eyes.
I've got this reporter's notebook, and I could never do shorthand.
Children know nothing about Batman. Oh, no, religion. Children apparently know nothing about religion.
That's right.
But they only know about Batman and Robin.
That's right.
And that's it, is it?
That's the answer, more or less, yeah.
It's another survey.
Which it is?
Yes.
They can also swear by the age of 2, I discovered.
That's right.
Wonderful. They can turn on videos, swear, and they believe Batman is God. Yeah, very sophisticated, really.
Yes. This all refers to the findings of a Maury poll which suggests that more than half of under-5s swear, have no knowledge of religion, and idolise cartoon characters in preference to their parents. Among the suggested solutions are releasing the Bible as a Kylie Minogue video and televising the adventures of middle-aged mutant hero turtles. And closing the round, we ask Alan Corran, Alan, who can make a cavalier go from naught to nicked in 3 seconds?
Oh, it's not the mouse-eared bat. You're nodding at me as if you know this. It's not the mouse-eared bat with no teeth.
Not necessarily, no. Tell
this
me
is
about
not the... This is not the drunken, the drunken driver with the drunken wife.
No.
It's about a very quick cavalier.
Right. No, well...
am I allowed to write him a note at this stage?
No. Nick
can answer if he wishes.
Nick.
No, you can't. Is this the opening of car doors
it
answer?
Is. Yes, that's right.
Where some cars take a great deal of time for thieves to get in. Thieves were sent down Oxford Street to open all the car doors they could find.
They were sent? You mean?
Yes, they were sent.
They didn't go of their own accord.
Those cars which hadn't already been broken into, there were one or two left. And the cavalier was the most rapid of entry of all, is that correct?
That's exactly right. You've got it absolutely right. And the answer is the car thieves, as you so rightly say, Nick. According to a demonstration by an RAC patrolman, most cars can be broken into and driven away in just a few seconds. But how many thieves are going to hang around long enough for the RAC to turn up? Apparently, easiest to break in was a 1982 Vauxhall Cavalier, while the hardest was a modern Skoda, principally finding a volunteer. And now the scores, and it's a steal. Richard Ingrams and John Wells are 7, but Alan and Nick are comfortably in the lead with 13.
And
Brian will now open the last round for us.
A walk in aid of a schizophrenia charity in Hampshire's New Forest offered hikers a choice of two routes.
Thanks to John Mulhern for posing us that one. Richard, your musical clue now, something to tap your fingers to. Richard, that was sooty. Why will sooty guarantee a dry eye in the house?
I beg your pardon?
I don't understand it either, and I've read the answer. However, the question is, why will sooty guarantee a dry eye in the house?
Is he going to be buried in Westminster Abbey?
Not until he's dead, no.
Is this the House of Commons?
I do know the answer, but I'll wait and...
Don't hang about. We'll be here all night.
It's Joan Collins, isn't
it? Absolutely right.
Joan Collins has issued an edict saying that if sooty squirts anything at her at all, in any direction, she'll leave.
That's right.
And if he hits her with anything at all...
Is she going to appear on the sooty show? What?
I mean, yes, I think she's appearing on the sooty show. Whether she's actually manipulating sooty is another question, which I can't answer.
Sooty is taking over in the West End in this Noel Coward show.
Yes.
That should be very interesting, Dickie.
I did think he'd passed on there.
So did I. I thought Sooty had passed on. Yeah. But there we are.
Along with Basil Brush.
Alive and squirting.
No, it is, as Nick says, this week's Joan Collins story. Ever wary of actors upstaging her, Miss Collins is to co-star with the D-soda-siphoned Sooty. They're going to star in the Keith Harris story, with Sooty playing the ventriloquist. Meanwhile, from the same school of drama as Miss Collins...
With his 41 Warner movies, Ronald Reagan has starred in more of the company's films than any living actor.
Well, thanks to Gary Jones of Kidwelly for that. John Wells, what happens if you stop dishing out on your aerial?
To do with the satellite device.
Oh, is it to do with... Tell me about these things.
Satellite devices, old boy.
Oh, they have square ones and round ones, don't they?
They do, yes.
They do, yes. I watch them on the television. And is that something to do with the answer?
No.
Oh.
It might be, actually.
It is to do with the answer, yes.
They're not paying for them. And then an Australian with a rather crumpled and lugubrious face comes around and rips them off again. People are buying these things on the Never Never, which is indeed how... Murdoch hopes to recoup his money, and because they're not paying for them, Rumbelows and Dixons and other heavies are coming round and unscrewing them from the walls. And for the first time, the sale of dishes has actually gone down.
Right.
Absolutely right. That is the answer. It's all about Pie in the Sky TV, which has launched a purge on viewers who don't keep up their £24.50 monthly instalments. During September, they disconnected 15,000 subscribers in a campaign that not even the Samaritans could talk them out of. And after losing Frank Boff, there's a rumour of other presenters going. It won't actually save any money. The blank screen just looks better value. But it's not only Sky that has a sense of humour.
Radio 3. 7 p.m., the news, followed by Third Ear Collection. Tonight, Van Gogh.
Nick, why are the Belgians looking up to a flying pyramid?
The Belgians are very worried about UFOs. 2,600 people have reported UFO sightings of a triangular nature shaped like a packet of Belgian chips, it occurred to me. floating over Brussels, and indeed the entire Belgian Air Force was scrambled in order to investigate these UFOs. Belgium is on a state of war alert. Nothing has been sent to the Gulf in case the UFOs decide to invade.
That's absolutely...
They're dishes. It's Murdoch coming down.
15,000 sky dishes.
Murdoch is parachuting down over Brussels with these bloody useless dishes and nailing them to Belgians. If you live in Belgium, you'll take anything. It's a very hard life. Even your cabbages are smaller than other people's.
You're quite right, Nick. Brilliantly answered. This all refers to the 2,600 recent sightings of UFOs in the shape of a flying pyramid over Belgium. So desperate are they to acquire at least one famous Belgian that they're willing to recruit them from other galaxies. Finally, Alan, where can fish enjoy a stroll by the canal? It's one of your balmy animal stories. I thought you'd
fish
have this.
Enjoy a stroll by the canal.
is the walking fish story.
It is the walking fish story.
The walking or a walking fish
a
story?
A walking fish.
Yes, John Major.
It's not the same as the Buddhist on the top of Mont Blanc, this, is it?
No, it isn't. I would like to hear about that, though.
No, this is the naked Buddhist, Zen Buddhist, who was doing a little meditation on Mont Blanc and was found frozen to a glacier. I was sure it would be about that, but it evidently isn't.
It isn't.
I don't know
what
the answer
is. Do you know the answer to this? Anybody
know the
answer? Does anybody in the audience know this?
Walking fish.
It all happened on a stretch of a St. Helens canal known as the Hotties, where angler Brian Ellis caught a fish with legs. Oh. It seems the water is heated by a nearby gasworks and contains the healthily reproducing stock of a defunct tropical fish shop. But before we go, it's cutting time, or gems from the archives. Richard, what have you got for us this week?
It's another apology, Barry.
Oh.
This time from an Indian newspaper, the Kashmir Times. It says, Mr. Orba was not, as we reported, the last of his line, but is survived by his sister and two brothers.
John, assume one of your many disguises and tell us what you brought.
Well, this one is from the Blaby and Broughton Mail, which caught my attention, Barry. We have been asked to point out that Mrs. Ellen Sansome, whose golden wedding anniversary we reported last week, was not born in Fleckney Working Men's Club, as reported. Also, her sons are Fred and Keith, and not Kath, as stated.
Nick, what have you brought for us?
This is a Daily Telegraph story about the firm's order to stop using sexist adverts, and it actually records one about which complaints were received. One advert for a Lancaster skip hire company featured a drawing of a woman in a miniskirt and thigh boots holding a whip above the caption, Skips and stones may break my bones, whips and chains excite me. You'll always be excited with Howard Skip Hire.
Alan, what have you got?
I've got one from the Croydon Advertiser, which says, when police were called to investigate a theft at her flat, 17-year-old Sandra Thornton offered them a cup of tea and a biscuit. But the officers recognised the biscuit as part of a haul of confectionery stolen from Crystal Palace Football Club.
Well, that's it, and we've come to the end of a very interesting 48 hours. All that remains for me to do is to give you the final scores, which are Richard and John, 8. And Alan and Nick, well in the lead, they have been the entire contest, with 17. They're this week's winners. Wonderful. Brian, will you have the last word, please?
A man who exposed himself to women in Chertsey did it for fun, a court heard last week. Magistrates were told how a witness was standing in her front garden one morning in August and saw the man exposing himself to some women in the field opposite. The prosecutor said she became very concerned and sent inside for some binoculars.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, John Wells, Nick Clark and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by John Langdon and the producer, Diane Messias.